8:18. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Park City's new superintendent of schools attended her first Board of Education meeting. Dr. Jill Gaudet joins me now in the studio with a recap and kind of a look ahead. Good morning to you, and thanks for being here.
Certainly.
So you've been on board since August 1. How's it going?
Excellent. What a terrific school district.
Yeah. Had an opportunity to kind of meet teachers, staff.
Just starting to exactly. We did a nice welcome back on the 17th.
Okay. So what do you see as the biggest challenge here, getting your kind of your feet on the ground?
I think this year it's going to be the roundabouts, getting the roundabouts completed at, by Ecker Hill Middle School. I think that's going to be a big project, to getting all the buses through.
Yeah. So any assurances that's going to happen tomorrow morning?
I think we're just getting the word out for parents just to please be patient. You know, we do know that every bus will be impacted because all of the kids, all the sixth graders go out to that school.
Right. What sort of new plans or processes do you anticipate implementing, if any?
Well, at this point, I presented yesterday my superintendent entry and transition plan for the Board of Education so that they could see my thoughts on these different areas. So basically, I'm aligning my work with those key strategic initiatives that the board identified last year. So I'm looking at academic excellence and excellent personnel. But I've also, of course, added fiscal responsibility and operational excellence to that list that they have, because, of course, those are all parts of the school district as well.
Yeah, there was also a part on communications there. You're running through some kind of communications plan audit. Tell me about that.
Exactly. So we have a communications director on staff, Melinda Colton, who's got good experience in the field in school districts as well as university. And she has some good ideas about auditing the current process, but then also making a nice communications plan for us.
Yeah. Well, when we recently received an email from Melinda Colton basically telling us that the interview schedule with you and board members would be adjusted, and you will no longer be giving board meeting previews. Can you tell us when and why that decision was made? You don't know? And the reason I ask, I mean, it's been a tradition that's been ongoing since the radio station started back in 1980. I mean, that the superintendent has come on, kind of given an opportunity for the public to hear kind of the rundown of the agenda, to address any kind of outstanding issues that were going on. And now we're being told that that's not going to happen any longer. And I'm just trying to figure out why.
Right. So I think I'm on once a month. I think that's our plan. So I think whenever you'd like me. I mean, whenever you want to call or have questions, I'm certainly happy to respond or answer those. I think part of my work this first year is really, because I'm coming new to the area, I really want to get to know the schools, and I really want to be in the schools, and I really want that to be my focus and priority. So that may be a shift, maybe from what's happened before, but I really feel it's important to have that boots on the ground, not to judge and evaluate as much as just get to know exactly what is happening so that we can continue the trajectory of excellence that the district's known for. So I think that's really where my time will be spent or should be spent this first year.
So this may just be a temporary thing to
certainly
to get
be.
Your yeah boots on the ground here. All right. There has been some criticism from staff that there's just so many changing plans, a lot of short-term experimentation with different academic programs. I mean, is that something you're going to get your arms around in terms of how we move forward from here? We're going to maintain those professional learning communities, the multi-tiered systems as well?
Right. So multi-tiered system of support, as you likely know, comes right out of federal legislation as part of IDEA, so Individual with Disabilities in Education Act. So part of this is to ensure that the system is built so that our students' academic, social, emotional, behavioral needs are taken care of and addressed, you know, throughout their learner experience from preschool all the way through 12th grade, and that if somebody is running into a struggle or a challenge, we have those immediate supports in plans in place so that the system can lean on that rather than reinventing the wheel. Similarly, if a student is advanced, and you don't want kids to be bored, right? You want the exact right challenge level for kids. So I think some of this is what we're talking about with MTSS and definitely building that structure this year. So we've got a great team working on that. I've been really impressed with what I've heard and seen from them.
Okay, so we're going to move forward again with those professional learning communities and this multi-tiered system of support. Let's see, in terms of what happened last night, the Board of Education approving that tunnel memorandum of understanding for the new tunnel under Kearns Boulevard between the high school and the seminary. My understanding is that we can now start on the first phase, but it won't have too many impacts, not until maybe next spring.
I think next summer, right.
Yeah. The biggest concern the administration raised was the loss of that Hawk Beacon, I mean, that we've been using now all these years, and what that's going to mean for the buses exiting the high school, especially those that are making the left-hand turn. Any solutions for making that a safe solution?
I think they were still talking about that as part of their design process, so I believe that is still under review.
All right, and the school board also unanimously approving a $57,000 consulting contract for, I think it's GBSB or something, the Master Planning Architects. Can you tell us what we get for that money?
Certainly. Well, facilitation as well as a product at the end. So I think the district commissioned basically a 10 to 15 year outlook as to the needs of the facilities. And that's everything from assessing the systems to looking at what is the master facility plan that works best with the community. Its projected growth, its educational needs. So we also in this have an educational consultant that will be looking at educational specifications now and for the future. So how the current classrooms are used and how that's projected to adjust, if at all, for the future.
So master planning, that's probably on the top three of your to-do list then?
Absolutely. That'll be a year-long project. We hope to be done with that maybe about May of 2019.
And the decision is that then we will have a plan and know how to move forward in terms of if we need to go to the community and ask for bond dollars, that would be well ahead of that process.
I think that's right. This process is really meant to do the assessment and what are the future needs and really set that course before they're even thinking at all about building or projects or a capital list. So I think it's more about the overall condition and then how do we move forward. So yes, collective community conversation throughout. That's the important part of the process.
And we've had lots of those community meetings already. I mean, are we going to be able to draw more people in? Because I think people felt like, well, we've already told you what we think.
Yes, and I think this group, the nice thing is it seems that they're taking all of the previous work, so they're not redoing. So if we've had the HVA system reviewed, they won't redo that part. So the nice thing is they will take all the information that exists and funnel through that.
Okay. Do we have a schedule at this point in terms of public gatherings?
They will be putting out a schedule, I believe, early September. So they're just getting that planning tool together.
All right. Let's talk quickly about safety updates. Where are we on the status of the fencing at all of the elementary schools?
Right. So I believe you will see fences around each of the schools, and I believe each of the neighborhoods had some input or some feedback as to what those look like and the height of those. I've looked at them. They're fences, right? So a fence looks like a fence. Many of them are pretty unobtrusive, though. They blend, which is nice. So it's not the old-fashioned chain link fence that we all think of when we think of fencing. So we have that in place. The elementary schools will see a different security vestibule entrance and exit for visitors. There will, in the near coming weeks, the installation of the Raptor visitor system will take place. That was trialed here about 3 years ago, was not implemented at that point, but it will be implemented now. So what that does is a parent or visitor comes in, brings their ID with them. The ID goes through the system, and then a label is printed for the visitor. So it's good from a risk management standpoint. We know who's in the building, and then we know when they exit.
So are the entries secure? I mean, will they be by tomorrow morning?
Elementaries, you will see the vestibules completed. Secondary will be. The bids come in. Actually, this week the bids came in for that work. So those have been put out a couple of times. You, of course, need electricians for this kind of work. It's hard to find people to come and bid on the jobs that are smaller projects, what you'd consider a small project.
That's what we've heard. I mean, that's why it's been delayed, because you just can't find the
people
submit. To do it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's great to put out the news that we kind of need workers.
Yeah. And so electricians, we've got a job for you.
Right. All of that's a part of a sustainable community, right? You have to look at all of the different job roles that a community needs. And
okay.
So I think that's an important part of education as well. We need to be looking at that.
All right. Real quickly, what's happening with the new deputy superintendent position? I mean, you've heard several people give feedback about the high increases in administrative expenses, especially in light of how little we're talking about student enrollment growth, less than 1%. this year. Are we moving forward with hiring that position?
I think you're going to find more than 1% this year when I come back to you with enrollment numbers
October
next
1.
Month. We've had some bubbles come in, my own children included. So it's pretty exciting. But yeah, new people coming in every day. I'm assessing, really assessing the next 60 days, putting that entry and transition plan into place, and then I will come up with, the proposal. So I believe the operational need is there. So we'll see what comes out of my assessments.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell us?
No. Thrilled to be here. Can't wait to get started. Tomorrow's the first day of school. Please be safe in those school zones. I think we get out of the habit in the summer. We're a little more relaxed. And I think we have a lot of walkers in the different neighborhoods. So please, please keep safety first throughout these upcoming weeks.
All right. Well, good luck in the new position. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's the new superintendent of Park City Schools, Dr. Jill Gaudet. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. A 17-year-old Park City female who was involved in the distribution of a synthetic opioid known as Pink that led to the death of two 13-year-old boys back in 2016 was charged with felony drug distribution charges. These deadly drugs are ordered online through what's known as the dark web. In the studio to talk more about that, I have Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson along with Park City Police Chief Wade Carpenter. Good morning to both of you, and thanks for being here. Margaret,
morning,
I need to get you real close to that. So one of you want to start with this? I mean, how do we define the dark web?
Well, the dark web obviously is a very complicated and complex system or process, if you will. It's a location where a lot of people are going to really obtain nefarious items, whether that's anything from drug usage to illicit firearms, anything in between that. It's largely controlled by the use of Bitcoin, and so it's very difficult to track. It's not impossible to track, but it is difficult to track. And just generally speaking, it's you don't just enter into the web browser an address. It typically is run by hardware or software that's obtained. So it's a level of concern that we have as law enforcement. And we obviously, that was a huge part of this case, as you recall, when we were dealing with this. So it's something that we really want parents to be aware of.
And did you even know about the dark web before this came out back in 2016?
Yes, we were aware of it. The problem is when you're dealing with that, I was unaware that we had 13 and 17-year-old kids that were accessing it, which was definitely an eye-opener to me. But it also that also leads to the concern that parents really need to have, and at their level of concern, knowing what their children are doing, having an understanding of what they're accessing and when they're accessing it.
So are there ways to identify whether someone is using the dark web on the family computer?
Yeah. Typically, it's very important that parents are having control of what's going on with their kids' devices, their handhelds, their computers, their laptops. And I would say, as we've always said, that you need to be the parent, step up and check their history. If you need to hire somebody to block access to some of those things, and even though they load some of this on and they can delete the item, they can remove the hardware or software, it will still leave, elements of that, or you can still come back and track some of that history. So if parents are concerned with that, they really need to take a close look at what's going on.
Yeah. Since it takes something to put on a computer or a device, then it's not like I can go to the public library and do it. I mean, that just wouldn't be able to happen.
Well, I'm never going to say it wouldn't be able to happen, but because there are other ways to it. And, really, we're not here today to talk about that, because I know that Margaret, as coming forward with Frontline Blue Line, she had a speaker that was directly going to speak to that and educate parents on what they need to know.
Yeah, but I guess for parents' sakes out there, I mean, they need to educate themselves to be able to know if something
absolutely
is going on.
Whether it be on their school computer, whether they a lot of times. These young people found loopholes in the systems, and we're never going to say you can't access anything. The reality is it's really a slippery slope, and there's a lot of things on the dark web that are very, very harmful to everyone, not just young people.
And Margaret, again, talk to us a little bit about, you've got a national dark web speaker actually coming to help educate parents.
That's right, Leslie. When we issued the community alert in late July to alert parents that once again there were some minors who had ordered illicit substances over the dark web, I took many phone calls from constituent parents who were worried and were full of questions about how am I supposed to recognize if my child has been involved in this kind of activity. And as a result of the parent questions, I worked with Chief Carpenter, Sheriff Martinez, and our county council to bring in this national speaker. He is going to be here on September 10th at Park City High School. We're combining that with the sheriff's annual Frontline Blue Line event. And this individual is a special agent with the U.S. Department of Justice, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. He's trained over 1,000 law enforcement officers on investigations on the dark web. And he's going to come here and give a presentation designed for parents and educators. This is not an event for children, but for parents and educators to talk about. He's going to give a hands-on demonstration of the dark web. He's going to explain dark web marketplaces and how they work. He's going to explain cryptocurrency. And then he's going to talk about safety and security implications for the dark web. So any parent who was reaching out to me asking, what can we do? How can we keep our children safe? Well, we're bringing in a national speaker to address the community and to talk about these very topics.
All right. That's going to happen, you said, the 10th at the high school. What time?
6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And it's in conjunction with the Sheriff's Frontline Blue Line event, which is drug recognition, internet safety, those kinds of topics. So it fits in very nicely with the sheriff's annual protocol.
Okay. And that's going to happen in that lecture hall then? So
Correct.
They'll be given presentations of just that, and then we move on to the speaker and opportunity for Q&A then, I'm guessing, as well.
Yes, we'll have him available afterward to talk one-on-one with parents.
Okay. So the Frontline Blue Line, is that only a parent, or is there a student component with that as well?
Not at this point. No, this is really for the parents. We're really trying to reach out to the parents and have some frank discussion as to what our concerns are and what they need to be aware of in today's world.
Yeah. Can we talk briefly about what are known as safe harbors? When parents may suspect that something isn't right, that their children may be doing something that isn't right, is there a safe harbor for them in terms of turning their child in, or perhaps a friend of their child's? How does that work?
Well, Leslie, that's another topic that came up in the aftermath of the community alert last July. A number of parents and also a number of reporters from this station had asked me about what are parents supposed to do? How are they supposed to trust turning over a substance that they find in their child's backpack to law enforcement that feels a little counterintuitive? It feels like buying trouble. And so what the chief and I are here today to try to do is to encourage parents to look at local law enforcement as an ally and as a resource and as a help, instead of looking at local law enforcement as a foe or something to be feared. The Juvenile Court Act, as it's presently written, along with basic principles of prosecutorial discretion, give my office a huge ability to work with families and individuals. And the goal here, which is the same with law enforcement, with the county attorney's office, and with parents, are safe kids, safe homes, and safe schools. And we don't need to get there by rote enforcement. We can get there through smart prosecution. We can get there through using the tools and resources available already in our system to get treatment, to get education, to get information to parents and families.
So if I were to find something in my kid's backpack, I could call you, Wade, and
Absolutely.
Say, this is what I found, and then you would what? Then
well,
take
need,
my kid?
Absolutely. We would not take your kid.
and give him a lesson, yeah. her lesson,
let me
I guess.
Tell you, and this has happened for ever since I've been here, our goal has always been you can't arrest your way out of drug usage. You have to educate. You have to make changes. And our officers, when we hire officers, they have an understanding of what the expectations. I'm not saying that they wouldn't ever arrest. I'm not saying that. But the idea is to really help them find their way through this process, meaning that when we're worried about the health safety issues, as we were before, as you recall, when we put out the public alert, please contact law enforcement. We'll send officers over if we need to treat it as a hazmat, because some of these substances are so deadly, as with the pink. One microgram could kill you. So you don't know what you're touching. Obviously, our officers are trained on what they can and can't do, and if we had to treat it as hazmat, we would. And unfortunately, these young people have no idea what they're getting. Margaret and I were talking just prior to this about a case in Connecticut, and we've had these cases here too, where even marijuana has been laced with things and has created all kinds of havoc and have caused people to go into overdose. And it's not necessarily just the marijuana, but it's the additional problems.
So what I'm hearing is that there is some leniency, there is some education, there is a safe harbor, and it really just depends on, I guess, the...
Well, we are a resource, the first resource being safe disposal of these substances, which are could be unknown and of unknown potency. But secondly, we're here to help create a safe community, and there are a number of ways that we can get there. I would like to invite any parent who finds something suspicious in their child's backpack, call me personally. Let's work through it. We can work through it anonymously if possible. But the goal here isn't to arrest and prosecute everything to the ends of the earth. The goal is safe children, safe schools, safe community.
Okay. And again, everybody get on their calendars September 10th, Park City High School, 6 o'clock. Sounds like a great informational meeting. Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for your time this morning. That's Park City Police Chief Wade Carpenter along with Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.
Hello, this is Bronson Calder with The Colony at White Pine Canyon. I, along with Kurt Peterson, are thrilled to have joined Bob Marsh on The Colony sales team. We are longtime supporters of KPCW and its voice in the community. Tour information and lot availability can be found at thecolonywpc.com or 649-3411.
Joining the Park City Chamber Bureau is an inexpensive and smart investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members receive private access to advertising opportunities, referrals, educational and professional seminars, business-to-business events, and other exclusive resources to help businesses grow. The Park City Chamber Bureau supports over 1,000 area businesses, both large and small. More info at visitparkcity.com or 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City and Heber Valley Hospital, Deer Valley Resort, Pioneer Theater Company, and L.L. Bean.
And welcome back. KPCW's Pledge Central here. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Emily Elliott working on the Deer Valley Resort Challenge. We've got Chief Operating Officer Bob Wheaton in the studio with us, along with the Director of Lodging, Kim McClellan, and Food and Beverage Director, Jody Ross, and KPCW's Emily Elliott. And let's get an update on that Deer Valley Ski Pass.
Well, let me just tell you, you're going to buy your Deer Valley Ski Pass anyway, right? So right now we're at $1,800 on our online auction. So if you go to kpcw.org and click on the auction, it'll take you over for bidding for good. I know you got to figure out what was that password again, but if you need to redo it, so be it. We have 98 items and 37 of them have no bids. But Deer Valley is up there. We thank you guys very much for donating a season's pass. So, like I said, you were going to buy a Deer Valley Ski Pass anyway, and now's the time to do that. And if you wanted to go to your local radio station, get on, click on there. The next bid up is $1,900. Right now it's at $1,800, but it's worth way more than that, right?
Way more than that.
Now, is this the like the Deer Valley Locals Pass? Is that what we're offering?
This is the Deer Valley.
Or is this the Icon Pass?
No Icon Pass. This is the Deer Valley Pass. You can ski 7 days a week, which I'm sure Bob always does anyway. So there you go.
Pretty much.
Get out there. Yeah. And no, it's not an Icon pass. It's not 5 days or only 10 days. It is the full season's pass. So
no blackout dates.
No blackout dates. It's at $1,800. It's still a steal. So get on there. And like I said, it all goes to a local radio station. 649-9004. We're here with Deer Valley. How many employees at Deer Valley? You should know this, Bob, right?
We have one winter, we have just over 2,800.
Okay, 2,800. So we got a lot more phone calls. We're a little short of that 2,800. So
a lot more phone calls, and that's 2,800 people that should be looking at those 39 online items that don't have a bid yet.
649-9004. There's a couple of thank yous, right, Jody?
Yes, I have two, and Kim has two. Firstly, Bob and Susan Reicher.
Thanks.
Thank you, Bob Wheaton and Deer Valley, for helping KPCW all these years with our pledge drive, and for you and Deer Valley do for our community. P.S. Susan gives a shout out to Emily and wants to know when she's available for golf again.
Awesome. I'm on it. Thanks, Susan.
Good. And then Steve Gibson, congratulations, Bob, on your, well, it's not a retirement.
It's not retirement.
I would like to say transition. On your transition there and you promotion within the Altera group. What an incredible ride it's been, Steve says.
He's not retiring. He's never retiring.
No.
Who retires
we
anymore?
We won't let him.
You can't retire in this community.
And Kim, a couple of from...
Yeah, I have a couple. One from Renee Bodley. She'd like to honor Bob Wheaton and all that he's done for our community and the support for KPCW. And then my friend Sydney Reed. Bob has an absolute fantastic job. We hate to see you go. KPCW, thanks for all you've done to keep us informed about the wonderful ski days coming. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about that, Bob. I mean, you're not going, or are you going? Where are you going to be found starting January 1?
I can be found in the same place. Mary and I have been living in Woodland for, I don't know, 15 years or so, and we're staying right there. And my replacement, Todd Shalon is the gentleman's name. I've gotten to know him really well. It certainly has my full stamp. He arrives September 24th. And then I don't actually start my new job until January 4th. So he and I will both be together for, what's that, almost 3 months, something like that.
So as of January 4th, you become what's known as the Senior Strategic Advisor for Altera Mountain Company?
Correct.
And are you just focused on Deer Valley, or are they going to just now start pulling you out to all of their property holdings?
The job's always been really tough anyway, Leslie. And, you know, as Emily said, skiing every day. And, you know, one of the other parts is, you have to go out and kind of benchmark, you know, with the ski industry, both locally, nationally, and internationally. And so that's always been a tough part of the job when you have to go and visit other ski areas and ski around. And that'll be a pretty big part of this new position as well. So I'll have to go to all the rest of the Altera resorts as well.
So it's a full-time position then for you?
It's...
But not a 9-to-5.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It is a full-time position. It's not a 9-to-5. And it's very graciously from the folks at Altera, pretty much on my own schedule. So it's pretty cool. It's about as cool as it gets, I think.
So we're already seeing the comments, and as you hear, it's just with some of these pledges, thanking you for the job that you've done since, 1981? I mean, you've been with the resorts. I started Deer Valley a
couple months before we opened the first year in 81. But I had a couple of different jobs, and I wasn't Ashley that GM until 87, I think, or 88 or something like that.
Yeah, but given that this really is an end of an era, I mean, because most of us, you're the only one we knew as general manager of the resort, how are things going to change, do you think?
I don't think they're going to change, Leslie, and that's the thing when, when we started the interview process for my replacement, one of the key issues was to look at someone who could support and embellish the values that Deer Valley was built on, you know, with teamwork and quality of guest experience, quality of staff experience, you know, community involvement, community support, all of those kinds of things. And that's what we really found in Todd. And, you know, he has 35 years of hospitality experience running five-star hotels all over. And when I can't wait for Todd to get here so that people in the community can meet him. I really can't. I'm really anxious. I was talking to Todd pretty much every day. And that was part of the conversation yesterday was, Todd, you know, when you land here on the 24th, you better have your parade shoes on, was how I put it, because we're going to be on a little parade because there's so many people in town that you need to meet soon.
So he's the right guy for the job in your mind. He's not somebody's nephew or son-in-law.
He's absolutely the right guy. Absolutely.
And he's not somebody's son-in-law? Or do you know that?
Well, he's probably somebody's son-in-law.
Son-in-law, but not the owner.
Because he is married and he's got two kids,
great.
Two older kids.
And you've often joked with us, you know, that a few things at Deer Valley would never change, and that being, of course, the recipe for turkey chili and the high expectation for customer service. But what do we know about snowboarding in the future or the cap on skier days?
There are no plans. Well, let me answer that in two ways, Leslie. Snowboarding hasn't been around for 38 years, but since it has been around, that's a discussion that we have every year. And it's typically a pretty short discussion, just like the discussion on the cap on skier on daily ski days, skier days. And I'm sure that same discussion will happen every year. But there are no plans on changing that decision. I mean, that's a big part of the Deer Valley brand, and that's what Todd fully understands. He's been here a number of times on his own dime as a guest and fully supports what Deer Valley is and where we've come.
Yeah. I'm guessing that you've heard from some of your longtime season pass holders. Are they expressing some concern or have you not heard from them?
I have heard from a lot of people, Leslie, and quite frankly, between the number of emails, texts, and phone calls, I didn't realize I knew that many people either, but it's been a little overwhelming. It's been very, very humbling, really has, and quite frankly, a little embarrassing because it's not, you know, and you even said it, you know, the end of an era. To me, it's not. I mean, it's just not. I think that there is so much tradition there that the team at Deer Valley, and I'm sitting right beside two of them, that are so strong and so committed and so talented and so valued. And I'm not leaving. I'm not going. I'm just have a slightly different focus. But having said that, Deer Valley is still there and it's going to stay there and it's going to continue to grow and it's going to continue to get better. I thought about this when I was driving in, Leslie, and, to think about where, Deer Valley has come since I started there. The first year we had five fixed grip chairlifts and that was it. And it was just a puny little deal, you know, and you look at, and we had 230 employees. The first year, 230, and now we're at over 2,800 and 21 chairlifts, and about 7 miles from the top of Empire to the bottom of the gondola over in, at Jordanelle, and we've certainly grown as has town. And is it different? Yes, it is. Is it better? I would like to think so. And I'm speaking about Deer Valley in particular and the town of Park City as a whole.
Yeah. 649-9004. Again, we still have an opportunity here to pick up that $125 pledge for a $100 gift certificate to the Brass Tag and some bonbons. We also have a add-on for anybody this hour, a I Love Moo Super Smoothie or Superfood Bowl or two walking waffles. That's pretty amazing. A waffle that walks, yeah. Also, for a $150 pledge, a $100 gift card to Fletcher's on Main Street, 649-9004. We're talking here with the outgoing COO of Deer Valley. He's taken on a new position with Alterra Mountain Company, the new owner of Deer Valley Resort, and, of course, also Solitude Resort as well. In terms of you two, Kim McClellan and Jody Rogers, you're pretty confident that things move forward the same for you? I mean, we're not going to see some of this other transition like we're seeing with Bob?
Leslie, I'll go first because obviously both Jody and I have had long, long relationships with Bob. And I think the greatest legacy he's going to leave with our company is the team that he's assembled and the culture that exists there. And every day I have the opportunity to see that commitment. And Bob will always be sitting on our shoulder. Don't know if it's the left shoulder or right shoulder. But as we make decisions, think about who we are, where we want to go, there will always be that whisper, at least in my ear, going, what would Bob do? And what Bob does is something we've all embraced for a long time. And it's something that we want to take that legacy and carry it on, and even find ways to do things better than we do them today. I know that's why Jody shows up every day. I know that's why I show up, and the people we all work with. So I really feel great about it, and I've spoken to Todd a couple of times. He seems like a really nice guy, and I love the idea that his background is hospitality, because that's what Deer Valley is.
And you're pretty confident, too?
I'm very confident. Bob would never put any of us in a situation to fail. He's never done it from day one, and I trust in the decisions that are made. And I also agree with what Kim has said. You know, having a hospitality background can make us better and stronger, which we always want to do. And I personally want to make Bob proud with everything we do moving forward. And he's still going to be part of our team. So, you know, we're all going to be working together. And as far as change is inevitable. We should be seeing change. We should be improving and making ourselves a better resort at all times. So
okay.
I'm excited.
Let's get to a couple more thank yous that before we end this hour.
Sure. I have a thank you to Margaret Olson. She wanted to say thank you to KPCW for helping us promote community safety. And then Bob Jody's and my good friend Ed Schall, who works in our marketing department, he wanted to say thank you, KPCW and Deer Valley, for all that you do for the community.
Then I have one from Alex Nat. Hi, Alex. Alex and I know each other from Restaurant Tax. The Nat family thanks Bob for making the Deer Valley difference. And one just in from Hans Fugge, who's always been a great supporter of Deer Valley, and we appreciate all his input on our food and beverage side. Thanks, Bob, for so many years of doing a great job.
Again, thank you, Bob Wheaton, for, again, your great support of KPCW. And course, we'll have an opportunity or two to talk to you before things change with your new position, but good luck in that.
Well, thank you, Leslie, and thank you for everybody who's called in. And, you know, please, I'm looking at the volunteers over in the next room through the window here, and please call in, light up their lights on the phone, contribute. It's, I know I'm preaching to the choir here being on the air, but it's an extremely worthwhile cause and a very valuable asset to all of us here in Park City. So thank you.
Okay.